Outside Health and Fitness Podcast, episode 131. I'm on vacation.
Welcome to the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. We're getting outside the box, outside our comfort zone, and outside and in shape. If you're bored with the same old fitness routine at the gym and you're ready to try something new, then this is the show for you. We're exploring new and fun ways to get fit on the trail, on the water, on the slopes, and outside.
Hi, this is Steve Stearns from Outside Health and Fitness, and thank you for joining me for another episode. If you're new to the show, we like to stay fit and active by having fun outside. We like to ride, slide, run, walk, hike, bike, golf, rolf, swim, and ski. If it's fun outside and it keeps us healthy, we love it. So if you're like us and you like to have fun outside, then you found the right place. If all goes well while you're listening to this, I'll be on vacation. Woohoo! Of course, I've got a lot of outdoor activities planned, and I expect to do some bike riding, hiking, kayaking, probably get in a few rounds of disc golf, that sort of thing. Now, I thought I'd go back into the archives and pull out a show from the past. Since it's summertime here in the U.S., I thought it would be a good time to revisit some of the fantastic tips Dr. Barry Goodman shared with us on maintaining a strong core. I was lucky to have Barry on the show back in August of 2014 for episode 86, and his appearance was very popular. So I hope you enjoy the show, and I'll see you again next week with another new episode.
OutsideHealthAndFitness.com.
Now, in this episode of the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast, I am really excited to bring you my conversation with Dr. Barry Goodman. Now, Barry is an outdoor athlete himself, so he knows firsthand the importance of protecting the back and building a strong core. As a chiropractor with over 30 years of experience, he's seen all of it, and today he shares specific stretches that you can do before and after your next hike or your bike ride or ski trip so that you're warming up and cooling down properly. Barry, I am so excited to have you on the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast, and I want to talk to you a lot about core strength and how important our back is for all of us that do these outdoor activities.
Well, I'm very happy to join you. These topics are very important to anybody that wants to get outside and stay outside.
Absolutely.
A lot of what we deal with is trying to keep people physically able to do what they want to do. When you injure your back, oftentimes you become a prisoner of your own body. And this is something people definitely want to avoid, especially active outdoor people.
No question. Very, very important stuff. Can you give my listeners just a little background on you and where you came from and how you got so passionate about what you do?
Certainly. I'm originally from Orlando, Florida. We moved to California in 1974 for my father to attend chiropractic college. He became a chiropractor, and we moved to Thousand Oaks, California in 1977 for him to open his practice. Well, at that time, I was very interested in becoming a veterinarian. So I graduated high school a little early and started my studies at a local college to get my pre-veterinary courses out of the way so I could transfer to a veterinary college. And unfortunately, during the course of my college, my first couple years of college, I had a real bad car crash, injured my neck severely. And the injury, more than the pain in the neck, was the problems I started having in my arms. The nerves that I damaged were the nerves that run into my left arm, and I'm left-handed. So I went from a very active 19-year-old to somebody that I couldn't even throw a football or a baseball overhand. I was losing function of my arm very quickly. And at that point, my father suggested that I let him examine me and see if there was anything he could do to help. Mm-hmm. Boy, did he help. He found that the problem that I thought was in my arm was actually coming from my neck. He started treatment to my neck. And before long, I was back skiing, hiking, doing all the things that I loved. And I was so impressed with what he had done for me without drugs, without surgery, without going through any kind of painful procedure. My injury was painful, but the treatment was very non-painful. It was very pleasant, actually. And as I recovered, I started asking him a lot of questions. Before I knew it, he made some arrangements for me to go down the local chiropractic college and talk to some of the professors. They made a believer out of me in no time, and I became a chiropractor instead of a veterinarian.
Wow.
So now we fast forward almost 30 years. This December will be my 30th year in practice. So I've been enjoying helping people for almost three decades. My father passed away 14 years ago. So my brother and I, my brother's also a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. We've been in practice together now since, let's say, I graduated in 84, my brother in 85. So my brother and I, we've been in practice for a long time together.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations, 30 years.
Yeah, almost. Very close. Just a few more months away.
That's awesome. That's great. That's a very interesting story. So it really, you know, your love of helping people and finding the art of chiropractic came from your own experience with it, your personal experience.
Yes, and you know, that seems to be a very common thread with many chiropractors. I have met so many chiropractors that never had an interest in it until they were injured and had care from a chiropractor, and suddenly they were on fire for this science that did so much for them. And I was one of those folks, you know. I was never had an interest in it. It was my dad's thing. And when I got hurt and needed it, and it was there for me and rescued me, so to speak, then I just evolved a huge excitement and respect for what was going on. That fire has not gone out for all this time.
You mentioned there that you kind of got back to skiing, and we talked a little bit before we started recording about hiking. So you do a lot of outdoor activities yourself.
Yes, yes. I ride a motorcycle. We have some really great places here in Southern California. And the town I live in particularly is nice because you can go to so many great places to do motorcycle riding from here. But I also really enjoy kayaking and hiking. I also like to target shoot. My daughter and I, we like to go to the range and, do a little target practice. We're not hunters or anything. Yeah. It's too easy to get my beef at Vaughn's to go out and look for deer or something like that.
That's right.
But a lot of my family members that live back east, they're still very into their hunting. But yeah, I enjoy a lot of outdoor activities. And I recently got my brother into kayaking with me, and he's really been enjoying that. We've had a ball together.
That's great. So you have this very unique perspective on things, don't you? You're an outside athlete. You understand all of that, but you also understand the importance of being physically fit, and particularly with regard to your core and your back, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, let's face it. Most people work on what I like to call the pretty muscles. They want legs that look strong and arms that look strong. And I was talking to one of my contractors the other day that had hurt himself badly, hurt his back badly, with something that he could lift with his arms. But once he got the weight up onto his shoulder, his legs buckled and he went down with about an 800-pound beam on him.
Ugh.
So folks really have to watch that their upper body strength is not a lot greater than their core strength.
Right.
Because then they can pick up things that will hurt their back. So what I like to really stress is that core strength, because most people are already working on the biceps, triceps, quadriceps, you know, things of that nature. It's the core that's so important. It's what holds us up. And muscular strength is what prevents a lot of the type of injuries I treat. In other words, a lot of people that are injured chiropractically had something overpower their muscles that are there to protect and support them. And in overpowering their muscles, they damage their back, either a disc or a ligament or tendon. So again, if we get back to that strength, if they had greater strength, they would have been much less prone to the injury. And this goes for anything. If I'm going down the trail and I slip and fall, the stronger my muscles are that support my back when I go down, the less I'll be injured in that fall.
Right.
And let's face it, anytime we're out on the trail, there's always a chance we can take a tumble.
Absolutely. A lot of folks that are out on the trail hiking are carrying extra weight already.
Yes, a lot of folks are running around out there extremely top heavy. I mean, think about where a lot of the backpacks sit. And many folks really aren't that careful about how they distribute the weight. That's another important thing in the packs. You know, they want the heavier stuff down towards the belt line, not up between the shoulder blades. And I see a lot of people that they pack for what they think they want to pull out on the trail. So sometimes they'll have some pretty heavy stuff up top that they should be carrying up there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because I know I've fallen victim to that before, where when I'm packing, I'm really thinking more about when do I need what I'm putting in there as opposed to the weight of it.
Exactly. And it should really be the other way around. If you have to take half the stuff out of your pack to get to something in the bottom that's heavy, it's better than hurting your back halfway to your destination and having a miserable trip.
We talked a little bit before we started about stretching and how important that is. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yes, indeed. You will notice when you watch any group of professional athletes preparing for competition, they stretch, and they stretch long, and they stretch hard. Watch a baseball game. The guys all stretch, then they warm up. Before, you know, they ever start the game, everybody's had a really good warm-up. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You want to increase your blood flow to the muscles. When your brain knows you're going to hit the trail, your body really doesn't. But as you stretch and prepare yourself for the trail, that stretching lets your body know that you're getting it ready to perform.
Right.
Your blood flow increases, your muscles heat up with the extra blood. As they heat up, they get more flexible and more resilient. Again, something that could limit or minimize injuries. So the stretching before an activity is huge. And I see so many folks that make long drives to the trailhead and then just jump out of their car, grab their pack and go. Big mistake.
Right.
It's best to get out of your car and do a bunch of stretching before you ever pull your pack out of the trunk. I also think it's a good idea because, again, folks will have to drive home after they've done their hiking. They want to do a cool down stretch to make sure that the muscles don't go into spasm on their drive home. Again, those core muscles are the ones that I think are most important. And to stretch those, it's really pretty easy. One of the stretches I like, I can literally lean against the side of my car at any trailhead. I may not want to lay down in the dirt first thing.
Yeah.
That might come later. But initially, I just lean against the side of my car.
Mm-hmm.
I basically get one leg planted real good so it's not going to slip because I'm going to be standing on one leg as I do this stretch. And I basically just gently take one knee and draw it up towards my chest.
Yeah.
I'll use my arms to pull it in close. Now, the closer I get it to my chest, the better stretch I get on some of those low back muscles. And that helps prepare them for what I'm going to do. I also see a lot of people doing a warm-up stretch where they're touching their toes.
Mm-hmm.
That does stretch out the muscle, but unfortunately, it also has a tendency because the intervertebral discs of the spine are on the front side of the spine. As I bend to touch my toes, I'm putting a mechanical force on those discs that can force a little fluid out of them. Now, what I want when I'm on the trail is a nice, thick disc full of fluid because it's a shock absorber. Now, if I do some stretching that milks some of the fluid out of that disc before I hit the trail, I've compromised the shock absorbers of my spine and I've made myself a little more prone to injury. So I'd like to see folks as they stretch their back, not try the old fashioned touch your toe stretch because that's really not a great one for folks to stretch their back safely.
Right.
You know, a lot of folks can get away with that toe toucher thing for a while and then one day they'll go down to do it and they'll end up with a sharp pain in their low back. That can be avoided just by changing the way they stretch. Right. I also like them to do some lateral stretches, and those are real easy. You just, you know, basically bring your arms up above your head like Superman and then lean your whole body side to side.
Yep.
That's a good stretch for some of those lateral muscles that the first stretch that I talked about won't help you with. There's also some good stretches for the hip flexors too, where you can cross one leg over the other. Basically, you cross one ankle over the opposing knee. The leg that's crossed over the opposing knee kind of looks like the letter four.
Right.
Now, as you're in that position, you just push down on the leg that's crossed over the other one. You basically push down on right near your knee. And you're just taking those internal muscles on the front side and giving them a nice little stretch.
That's excellent. I was just doing that while you were describing it. It feels great.
Yeah. Isn't that a good one?
It is. It's very good. Those are hard muscles to stretch sometimes.
Yeah. And see, that's the problem. Oftentimes people kind of know what they want to stretch, but they're not sure how.
Right.
I have a lot of folks that come to me and they'll say, Dr. Barry, I want to stretch this. This is how I do it. Right. And it's like, well, not really. And I'll have to just kind of fine tune some of what they're doing a little bit. But there's a lot of great material out there for stretching. Our good friend Ryan Crane, he's got a lot of great info on keeping the muscles in top shape between stretching and strengthening. And I think that both are equally important. Sometimes folks will say to me, well, Dr. Barry, if I don't have time to do both, what's the most important? It's like, you know what? If you don't have the time to do both adequately, split your time in half and do a little bit of both. Because right. I really don't think it's a good idea for folks to just do one and not the other. I think they really go hand in hand.
We talked a little bit about the stretching that you should do, and I'm totally tracking with that because I will go where I live. I drive about an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, over to the White Mountains to do hiking and skiing and stuff. And mm-hmm. the worst part of the entire trip is trying to get out of the car when I get back here. So yeah. I'm totally tracking with you on that. What about the strength, though? You talked a little bit about how important it is to build that core strength. What ideas do you have there? What should we be doing?
Well, you've probably heard of planking.
Yeah.
You basically get in almost a push-up position.
Yep.
You get in up part of the push-up and you hold it. That's a great one to build core strength. There's another one that people can do on a dining room table. Basically, you step up to the table, and you put your belt line right at the edge of the table. Now you lean your upper body onto the table, supporting yourself with your arms, and then basically you lift your leg up backwards. You're using the weight of your leg to work the muscles of the lower back. That one's also a really good one. I like exercises that people don't have to go in the gym for.
Yeah, yeah. Do them anyway.
The reason for that is, let's face it, if you and I are going hiking, we're not going to roll by the gym, do a bunch of stretching and strengthening there before we hit the trail. I want things that people can do the night before they go out at
right.
home.
And just make sure that if you're going to do that dining room thing, that no one's eating, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you also want to make sure you got a good stable table because
right.
I have a few friends that if they weren't careful, they could end up with that table on top of them because they're pretty big. They're pretty big sized people. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, that's right. That would not be good. You know,
Steve, one of the things I didn't really talk about, and a lot of people don't think about this when it comes to backpacking, but what about the shoulder and neck muscles? Because let's face it, those backpack straps go across our trapezius muscle, and we're going to be bearing some of that weight with those neck and shoulder muscles.
Yep.
So the easiest way for folks to work those muscles is literally to turn their head slowly and steadily side to side as far as they can go. Once they get to the extreme emotion, just hold for about maybe 2-3 seconds. Then they can lean the head laterally side to side, doing the same thing. Now, keep in mind, they don't want to go to a point of pain. They want to feel a gentle stretch, mm-hmm. but they don't want to feel pain. What I find happens with many folks when they're trying to exercise their spine, they try to force their spine to go farther than it's designed to go, and that's a good way to injure yourself.
Yeah.
So I always tell folks, err on the side of caution. If you think that's as far as your neck can go, don't try to go 10 more degrees. Big problem.
Yeah.
The other couple exercises for that same region would be lifting the head upward, again, stretching those posterior muscles as we go, and then bringing the chin downward. I also like to see folks do what I call shoulder rolls or shoulder shrugs.
Yep.
You would bring your shoulders upwards, then pull them backwards and downwards. Imagine if you took a Sharpie and put a dot on your deltoid, and you were trying to make that dot spin around in a circle, backwards.
Yeah,
it's just rolling those shoulders up and back. And as you come back, you squeeze the blades together. You can really feel a good little stretch in between there. And what I do a lot of times when we stop for a break on the trail, that's when I'll do some shrugs and stretch my neck a little bit, because oftentimes I'm carrying a fair amount of weight on the trail and my muscles occasionally just need a little break from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how much weight, we were kind of talking about this beforehand as well. How much weight should somebody carry on the trail? I mean, do you find hikers that are just overdoing it?
Yes, I do find that happening. And see, that's tricky with adults. With young people, we recommend no more than 15% of their body weight mm-hmm. be put on their shoulders in a backpack. And we're usually, with the young people, we're talking more their school books. Oftentimes a book bag is heavier than a backpack a young person would carry. So for them, it's 15% of their body weight. Now, for adults, we can condition to carry a little more, but I think it's a bad idea to carry more than about 25% of your body weight. I really do. Now, that doesn't mean a small person can't carry a pretty decent amount of weight, but they have to really build up for it.
Yeah.
I've got I've got some friends I know that have a good 6-8 inches difference in height and a good 50 pounds different in weight. But in the gym, they're basically lifting the same. Mm-hmm. Now, in that case, that smaller person could lift probably maybe 30, 35% of his weight, but he's really built up for it. You know what I mean? He worked hard to get to that point.
Yeah.
Most of the time, folks' strength has some proportion to their size.
Right.
You know?
Right.
A bigger person has bigger muscles, and if they're, you know, active at all, those bigger muscles are going to be stronger than smaller muscles.
That's yeah.
just, you know, I was talking to my son-in-law today. He's a firefighter, and the kid's ripped, and he was checking his grip strength on the dynamometer, and I said to him, see, size does matter.
That's right. I wanted to ask you, we've talked quite a bit about hiking, which is awesome because I do a lot of hiking and I know a lot of the listeners enjoy hiking as well. So this has been very valuable stuff. But I want to talk about some of the other sports too. You know, you mentioned kayaking, you mentioned cycling and skiing. What do you see there? Do you see similar injuries and people kind of making the same sort of mistakes that you see with hikers?
No, you know what? They're usually very different situations. For instance, my cyclists oftentimes suffer problems in their low back and pelvis that have a lot to do with the seat, the
yeah.
seat's position. The seat's position relative to where the bottom of the pedal stroke is, things of that nature.
Yep.
Also see a lot of them, you know, beat up their knees cycling, especially if they don't have the seat set right.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of the folks, if they really get a good fitted seat, if when they're going through bumpy areas, they get out of the saddle, what you don't want to do, especially if you're mountain biking, is you don't want to sit down through a washboard trail or
yeah.
through any kind of bumps. Because once you sit down, your spine is taking all the shock.
Right.
If I hit a washboard trail and I'm on the pedals, I can use my leg as shock absorbers and ease all the stress to my low back.
Yep.
So again, with the cyclist, we don't see compression to the spine from carrying weight. We usually see compression from the spine from the back being used as a shock absorber.
Right.
So a lot of times just setting up the bike right, that can really help there. Now, I like to think that for cycling as well as for hiking, the stretching exercises are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen, you know, some of the cyclists need to do a little more quad stretching, but that's getting into areas outside the back, and the quad stretches are really easy. You can do those with lunges. You can stand on one leg, take the other leg, and, you know, pull a foot behind you.
Yeah.
And as you bend, you know, as long as you don't have bad knees, you don't want to do that stretch if you got bum knees, because that'll really, really put some force on your knees, some, you know,
right.
Compressive force. Now, with our skiers, a lot of what we see with them, believe it or not, are more neck injuries from forward falls onto their neck and shoulders.
Oh, okay.
I've gone to wearing a helmet. I don't know about you, Steve, but I've just seen too many people hurt.
Yeah.
Last time I went up skiing with my buddy, it was an icy day. We were skiing locally. Southern California doesn't have great skiing, but we do have some.
Yeah.
So we were up in an area where there was quite a bit of ice, and in the first two runs, he fell and smacked his head. My wife was mad, but after that, I gave him my helmet for the rest of the day, and now I carry two helmets. That way, anybody skiing with me, they don't bring a helmet, they're wearing one of my spares.
Yeah.
I just, it's really important.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think back all those years that, you know, we skied without helmets, and, you know, it is so easy just to catch an edge, and in a split second, you know, you're out of control.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's lots of trees around, and there's lots of rocks and hard ice and all that stuff, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen people coming down in the basket before, and then as you are coming down the mountain, you'll see where they went down, and if there's a rock showing, you usually see blood on it, you know, and that's something nobody wants to have happen to them is have a head injury when they're skiing.
Absolutely. On that cyclist piece there, to go back to that for a second,
sure.
I've often thought that position that a road cyclist is in, you know, I do both cycling on the road and mountain biking, and I've always found mountain biking to be much more comfortable for my back. And,
yes.
And same thing, like you said, I'm kind of out of the saddle. I'm using my legs and my arms. But that position that a road cyclist is in, even when it's all measured properly and fitted properly, does that do something to that lower back? Because it seems like you're putting a lot of pressure on it.
Steve, you are exactly right. It is much harder on the low back. If you look at the spine when we're standing up, we round out at the buttocks.
Yep.
Above the buttocks, we have an inward curve. Then we have an outward curve where our rib cage is. And then in the neck, another inward curve. Okay, now I get on a road bike. The first thing I do just to reach my handlebars, I have to pretty much flatten and almost reverse the curve of my low back. Right. Now, it isn't doing much to my thoracic curve. But now the next thing I've got to do, now that my body's in that position, I've got to bring my head way up and I've got to overextend my neck.
Yep.
So unfortunately, the road cycles, like the sport motorcycles, basically put you in a little bit of a compromised position.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I ride a certain type of motorcycle is because of the seating position. I love the sport bikes. They look great, but they're very uncomfortable. And I don't feel like I have the same kind of control I do on the bike I ride. I ride a Harley-Davidson Superglide.
Yeah.
And it's one of the more high-performance Harley-Davidsons, but you're sitting up nice and straight. Your arms are out in a good position. You're not coming up from below with your arms, with your back bent, you know, in an awkward manner. When I go out bicycling, it's always on the mountain bike. I don't think I've used my street cycle in 5 years just because we've got a lot of traffic now and I keep seeing people coming in to see me that have been hit by cars on their street cycle. But the other thing is the mountain bike just feels better for me, just feels a whole lot better. And again, a lot of it is the position. I also think that because of the position, we should be able to go longer, stronger on the mountain bike than the street cycle.
Yeah, yeah. I feel way more comfortable on that mountain bike. And you're right, the road is getting dangerous.
Well, if you think about it, most of your street bikes have no suspension at all.
Right.
Any suspension your bike's got saves shock being transmitted to your body.
Yeah.
So with the mountain bikes, again, you get an extra benefit. Better position, you get more shock absorption, and if your body has to take up the shock, you're in a better position to take it up than you would be on the road bike.
Absolutely. When you work with your clients, are they coming to see you in person, or do you also have an online presence as well? How does that work?
You know, what I'm doing really requires quite a bit of hands-on. I mean, there are some things I can, you know, some information I can relay to people online, and I do that whenever I'm called on to do it. But oftentimes, as I talk to somebody online about things, ultimately, in talking to them, they say, you know what, I think I need to come and see you. Because so much of what we do as chiropractors, you know, really is hand-on.
Yeah.
Anybody that needs any type of spinal adjusting, there's just no way people can do that on their own. Many of the conditions we treat, exercise can help, but you can't exercise them away. Otherwise, chiropractors would never be in their offices. We'd be passing out exercises and we'd be out having fun.
Yeah.
But a lot of what we do really does require us to be very responsible and diligent and be in our office. That was one of the, I remember when I was talking to my father many years ago about him and I working together. He was very worried about if the surf was good, I would not show up to work. If the snow was good, I would be gone for a week. And, you know, I actually had to sign a contract with him that no matter what the weather was like and what the surf or snow conditions were like, I would be at work on certain days.
That's only a contract that a father could put together, right?
Yeah, indeed. Well, He knew what he was getting into, and he knew the possible pitfalls, and so he made me sign off on those from the very beginning. And we had many good years working together because I would always make arrangements in advance if I wanted to go skiing, and would never leave him in the lurch, so to speak.
Now, do you have a lot of clients that are outdoor athletes or weekend warrior folks?
Yes, we do. Yeah. And I'll tell you the gamut that we have. We have some people involved in mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. We have some people involved in your traditional judo and karate. We have hikers. We have bikers. We have a couple people that their forte is doing the mud runs where you climb over a wall, crawl through a mud pit. They just love this stuff. But because of the nature of those things, I mean, let's face it, that's like a Marine combat course.
Yeah.
People sometimes get hurt in those things, not because they weren't conditioned well and strong, just because they slipped in the mud and fell.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's just a lot of things that can happen. But yeah, we live in an area that's just inland from Malibu. So you can imagine the beach is very close by. We have parks everywhere. We have a lot of great hiking just an hour away. We have really nice hiking even closer than that. But I mean, you can go into the mountains for weeks by just driving an hour and not see another soul. So where I live is really conducive for people that like the outdoors. It's very different than folks that live in Los Angeles, because that being a big city, they just don't nearly have the easy accessibility to the things that we have out here.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I got into the kayaking, because I also have a ski boat. But to get everybody out for a weekend of skiing takes a lot of prep. Gas is way more expensive than it used to be to fill up the boat. And I can burn up a tank of gas, you know, in 5 or 6 hours. So my brother and I were looking for something that was easier, a little more economical. And we found that throwing the kayaks in the back of the truck and going to Ventura and doing a little ocean kayaking is just the easiest thing in the world. And it costs virtually nothing. So we're doing a lot of that. And that's a lot of fun.
And that's great core workout too, isn't it?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
A lot of times when my brother and I go out and we're not just doing a leisurely kayaking, we're going out to work out, I'll get back in and my arms are almost shaking. You know, you can just get a good workout, because we've got a course we run, and coming back, we're coming against the current that comes in the breakwaters. And if the wind kicks up, oh my gosh. Just to be able to get to the beach, you've got to work hard. And if you don't want to work hard, you're going to have to leave your kayak and walk back to your car and go get it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun, because, you know, the last part of our little journey is fun, but in a grueling way, if you know what I mean. It's a good way to end the day.
It's awesome on the water like that, because there is no rest. You got to work, because if you stop and rest, you're losing ground, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's different if you're on a lake. You can stop and rest. But when you're in the ocean, there's always a current doing something to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really enjoy the ocean, because so many of the marine creatures are very curious, but they don't like noisy things.
Mm.
So they'll pop up, you know, a seal pop up right next to me in the kayak. I mean, they popped up so close to me, it kind of, you know, shook me up for a second, because I didn't expect a little head to pop up next to my elbow.
Right.
But it's really neat, because you get such a close experience with them. We were tracking a little pod of dolphins, and we were keeping right up with them. So the little ones were breaching pretty good, and they were splashing water on us. And I told my brother, I said, you know, where else can you get? You can't get this experience at SeaWorld.
No.
You know, it's just, to me, it's just a lot of fun being out there and seeing all the great things there are to see. And of course, a lot of my love of the outdoors and seeing all the wildlife goes back to my first desire to be a veterinarian.
Right.
That's, you know, right. So yeah. For me to get out there and check things out is just, that's right up my alley. A lot of people I know, they love the outdoors, but they always get nervous when they see any kind of creature. It just makes them paranoid.
Right.
Doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. I forgot about that. You're right. I mean, that's you had another tie in there because of your love of animals and that early venture into veterinary. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of what keeps me out there. My daughter's always trying to get me in the gym. That confined environment just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I like to just get my exercise a different way. And a lot of my patients, you know, they look at me and they think I'm in the gym all the time.
Right.
And I try to explain to them, look, you don't have to go in there and lift a bunch of weights. There's things you can do, everyday activities that can keep you strong and make you stronger.
Yeah.
You just have to get out there and do it. I think the biggest thing we fight these days is people have a tendency to sit too much.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, because we do have a lot of people in the society that we have, and I'll tell you, I am one of them. I'm a cubicle dweller during the day, and I find that I'm just sitting an awful lot, and you know, that's got to have a tremendous impact on your spine and on your posture and everything else.
Indeed, it does. Matter of fact, the AMA has come out with some new guidelines on sitting. They don't feel it's a good idea to sit for more than a half hour at a time.
Yeah.
Because of those very things. And, you know, many people I know are in the same boat you are, Steve. They work in an office. They're in a cubicle most of the day. But I always tell them, look, you need to look for excuses.
Yep.
Go to the water cooler a little more often. Go down and talk to a coworker about something that is important. Don't shoot them an email every time.
Right.
Every now and then, even if it's just 40 feet from your cubicle to theirs. That's 80 feet you walk there and back.
Yep.
At lunchtime, don't go to the break room and sit. Go to the break room, eat your lunch, then go out for a little walk. Or go out for the walk before you eat your lunch. But make sure your lunch isn't just sitting.
Right.
I am lucky because, you know, at this time of the year in California, we have daylight till 8:30 in the evening. So I can get off work, come home, take my dogs out for a walk, take a bike ride. I can do a lot of things before dinner. My wife and I eat late because we both like to get off work and do things. She has a couple of horses and she wants to go see her horses. Sometimes she'll want to go out for a quick little ride. And maybe that means we eat at 8 o'clock at night. Big deal. I didn't go from sitting all day at work to sitting in my car driving home to sitting at dinner and then sitting the rest of the evening. I broke it up a little bit in between. And I think that's something everybody should just get a plan. You know what I mean? A lot of people, the only reason they sit as much as they do is they forgot to plan how not to sit that much. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Sitting was just kind of part of the day. And if they had thought about it, they could have planned some time to get out and walk a little bit, but they just didn't make the plan.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know what they say about failing to plan? That's the plan for failure, you know?
That's right. Fail to plan, plan to fail. That's right.
That's right. So, you know, for me, I kind of like to map out my day and go, wow, you know, I'm going to be sitting for this length of time. I need to plan something right after that to, you know, move around a little bit. We do a lot of relicensure seminars, and sometimes these are 12-hour days.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the people, when they have a break, they go from sitting to out in the hallway standing and talking. And standing and sitting, the muscles are used in a somewhat similar fashion. There's no contraction and relaxation. It's just contraction, contraction, contraction. With those same people, would just grab the person they wanted to stand and talk to and walk around as they talk, just stroll and talk. They'd be using their muscles in a very different way so that when they went back to sitting, the muscles would actually feel like they got a little break.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. You know, I've done some conventions before, or, you know, I've gone to like job fairs and things, and man, my lower back is killing me by the end of the day. And I haven't been sitting, I've been standing, but I really haven't been moving either, you know?
And see, for the back muscles, standing would be like me taking a rock the size of a baseball and holding it in my outstretched arm and not moving it, just holding it straight out there and trying to hold it. Very quickly, my arm's going to fatigue. Now, if I take that same rock and instead of holding it out in front, if I swing it forward and back, I can go all day doing that.
Right.
And again, I'm using the muscles in both cases, but I'm using them in a different way. Many people don't realize that the reason heart muscles can beat all the time is that they contract and then they relax. They contract and then they relax. So if you think about it, the heart muscle is at rest half the time.
Yep, yep.
Only when it contracts to push the blood out is it actively working. Once the blood is pushed out and the heart chambers are refilling, those muscles are pretty much at rest. So if we think of our skeletal muscles the way the heart muscle works, we got to work it, rest it, work it, rest it. So if I'm sitting all day working it, at some point I got to get up and move around because that's going to give it a rest. I can't easily go and lie down, which might be optimal, but by moving around, I'm using the muscles differently, and that's not as hard on them as keeping them contracted in one position.
Right, right.
And, you know, Steve, I don't know if you've ever noticed that sometimes you're sitting there and maybe your legs and feet are bothering you a little bit. A lot of people don't think about things like, okay, I'm sitting here at my desk. Why can't I move my feet around a little bit? You know, not stomp them on the floor, but just move them around a little bit.
Sure.
I can still work at my computer. You know, I can walk and chew gum at the same time. So I can key while I'm gently, you know, moving my feet around a little bit. That won't help the back, but it'll help the legs and feet to some extent.
Just keep moving.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I was watching an interesting piece recently, and they had a bunch of medical doctors. They were all orthopedic surgeons. And they said, doctors, if you guys could all come up with one thing you think that's contributing to the huge increase in back pain in America, what would it be? And it didn't take them any time to confer and come up with the same answers. And to get five orthopedists to agree on anything is not that easy. But they all agreed that the biggest thing was lack of movement.
Yeah.
We're too sedentary. We got to move more. And what I notice when I get some of my sedentary patients moving, oh my gosh, Steve, the difference is amazing. They start dropping weight, doing virtually nothing but being more active. Their muscles get stronger. Their posture gets better. And the things that used to bother them, God, every time I used to sweep the patio, it used to kill me. Now that they're a little stronger, it's like, hey, Dr. Barry, I swept the front patio and back patio and vacuumed two rooms, and my back felt fine.
Right.
Felt fine because their muscles weren't overpowered by what they did because their muscles were stronger. And again, I just, you know, I can't overemphasize that protective factor of the muscles. Weak muscles lead to back injuries that are pretty easy to occur. The stronger muscles just make you a lot less vulnerable. Doesn't mean that big muscles make you invulnerable, of course, but it makes you less vulnerable.
Now, if folks want to follow you online or contact you or find out more about what you do, is there a website I can send them to?
Yes, I do have a website. It's GoodmanFamilyChiropractic.com.
Okay.
If they wanted to get a hold of me, because that site's basically set up just so people can request a consultation with us. You know, that's basically set up for our new patients.
Yep.
But anybody that wants to contact me, I have an email address that they can use. They can go to GoodmanClinic@Verizon.net is probably the best one.
Okay. Awesome.
Because I've got another one, GoodmanClinic1@gmail.com. But that one is more for the constant contact stuff I send out. Also, anybody that wants to contact me by email, and if they wanted to give me their email address, I could put them on the list for our newsletter. We do a monthly newsletter. Now, if they don't want to give their email address, because I'm not trying to collect a bunch of email addresses from people. I just want to make sure the people that want the info can get it.
Yep.
If they don't want to do that, normally what I do on the resource part of my website, all my old articles are on there, and they can just go through, and the articles are in there by title, and they can just pick what they want to see, you know, whether it's an article on exercise or an article on hydration. We like to cover a broad variety of topics. Some chiropractors, every newsletter is all about the back.
Yeah.
I like to go into other things because, let's face it, we're more than just a back with legs, you know. So I like to get into other things that people might find helpful.
Sure.
And you know what? That brings up something I wanted to ask you about. In talking to a lot of your followers about how much they hydrate, which is really important to protecting your back, again, back to those discs loving fluid.
Right.
And if we don't hydrate enough, we can compromise them before we ever do any exercise at all. We can set ourselves up for an injury just by not hydrating enough. What have you been encouraging people as far as how much they should hydrate? A lot of people have these weird formulas of, you know, 6 16-ounce glasses a day, and you know, they have some rote formula in mind. Have you been, you know, familiar with what I'm talking about in terms of a rote formula?
Yeah, I have. I know I've heard of the 8 8-ounce glasses a day, and what I've heard before is that that's pretty good for maybe an average sized woman, and maybe a man that's an average size might need a little bit more than that.
Yeah. Basically, it doesn't cover the wide range of human beings. We're all 70% water. Now, I'm 150 pounds of 70% water. My best friend's 220 pounds of 70% water.
Right.
If we tried to hydrate to the same degree, he would always be dehydrated.
Yep.
So the old equations are kind of been thrown out. And I wanted to let you know the new one, the current one that we're using, that really makes more sense than anything I've ever heard. You take your body weight, you cut it in half. That's how many ounces of water you need to drink a day.
Nice.
So for me, 75 ounces of water a day at 150 pounds. Now, if I exercise, I'm probably going to want to up the ante a little bit because I'm going to be losing water through water vapor, perspiration. You know, people don't realize even when you breathe, you have water vapor in your breath. That's why we can fog up a mirror.
Yeah.
So as I'm walking on that trail, breathing hard, I'm not just moving oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. I'm losing some fluid too.
Yeah.
And you compound that with the sweating and everything else, you can lose a lot of fluid in some of the outdoor activities that you and I enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm really careful when I'm on the water because a lot of people think, well, you're on the water, Barry. It's cool. You don't need to hydrate as much. Oh my gosh. I perspire so much when I'm out on the water. I think I probably hydrate more on the water than I do on the trail.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was talking with somebody today, in fact, about how many times I talk to people about winter sports and how people just don't feel like they need to stay hydrated doing winter sports because it's cold.
Yep.
And that's not the case. Like you said, I mean, sometimes I'm sweating like crazy in the wintertime, yep, some of the stuff that we do. So,
and think of times that you're not sweating, but you're wearing a bunch of gear that's designed to do what? Draw water vapor away and out, right?
Yep.
So I may never feel, if my equipment's working right, if my jacket's working right, it's pulling everything away before I ever feel sweaty. It's pulled it away and let it loose to the atmosphere.
Yep.
So I lost it, but I didn't realize I lost it.
That's right.
Plus, let's face it, people are wearing extra clothes to stay warm. That's going to be an effect too. So, Steve, you're so right. Many times people think it's less necessary based on the temperature, but hydration's hydration. It's based on really what we're doing more than anything else, not the outside temperature.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that about what you were saying about your newsletter. You know, it's more than, you know, you like to cover all of these aspects like this. And I think you've got this very unique angle on it that you do the same stuff we're doing.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
it's beautiful.
That's what I really loved about going to your site, because, you know, when I talk to someone who's primarily working with people in the gym, yeah, I've been there, done that, but I'm not interested in it. I'm not passionate about it. It's not something that I'm really involved in.
Yeah.
But when I looked at your site, it's like, wow, there's nothing on there I don't like, and everything I do like is there. So, I mean, you had everything but motorcycles on there, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe I'll have to branch out into that at some point. Who knows?
It's a lot of fun, and you live in a great place. You've got so many great places to see on a motorcycle. Yeah. But I know a lot of my friends that backpack, the thought of getting on a motorcycle for them is just like, nah, not interested at all. My biggest problem is I never have enough time for all my hobbies.
The toughest part is always the time. Well, Barry, it's been awesome talking with you. I mean, you've shared some really cool stuff. Speaking of time, I really appreciate you taking the time, because I know you're a busy guy.
Yes, but it was my pleasure, Steve. It was my pleasure. And I hope what you and I have talked about can help a lot of people be safer out there as they're exercising and keep themselves out of a chiropractor's office. Because what I really like to see are people doing the right things so they don't have to come and see me. Because it's usually when things have gone wrong that people really need me. So the more they do it right, the less likely they will end up in a chiropractor's office, which is a good thing.
That's awesome. All preventative stuff, right?
Indeed, indeed. And the article that we've just worked on that'll be going out soon is all about balance. So if any of your patients are worried about their balance and wanting some tips on some little exercises for balance, tell them we'll be putting that article out this week. So
awesome.
They can contact me at our email address, and I'll get the information to them. One of the things I try to really be good about is being very responsible when people contact me and want info. So tell them if they contact me, they're definitely going to hear back from me.
Oh, that's great. And I'll make sure we have a link in the show notes to all of those, not only to your site, but also to your email address, so folks can contact you and sign up for your newsletter too.
Fantastic, Steve. I appreciate it. And it has been such a great pleasure talking to you.
Stop by outsidehealthandfitness.com/131 for links to everything we talked about in the show today and more information, including links to Dr. Barry online. While you're there, be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, get your free morning Tabata routine, and stay up to date with more information on getting outside and in shape. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. I hope you got something of value from the show today that helps you get outside and in shape. For more on taking your health and fitness outside, visit outsidehealthandfitness.com and subscribe to the show. Until next time, I'll see you outside.